Welcome to the Better Have podcast, and I'm here today with my Better Have, Bola, and we hope that this will add value to your relationship, whether you're married or single. In this episode of the podcast, we're going to be speaking to the subject of criticism and how it can either make or mar your relationship. So we can move it from hurtful to helpful. Criticism can be hurtful if it's not well managed or well handled, and it can also be helpful and move your relationship in the right direction if it's for the purpose of shaping perspectives. But a lot of the time, it creates a lot of issues when we criticize each other, and we've had a fair share of that.
More than our fair share. I think we have had much more than our fair share, and it's interesting really for me that, you know, we get to unpack this conversation today, because I was asking myself really when I was thinking about it, you know, are you really in the place where it's always completely helpful? There's still some hurtful moments, you know, but I guess the one thing I can say is that we're far better today than we were yesterday. We're coming from a long way away, and I guess some of the tips that we've learned along the way will be useful for you. So I think we're better today. I won't say we've mastered it 100%, but we're better today than we were when we first met. Things like, you know, things that you used to say to me at the beginning were like, how come I can take it when you tell me to do things differently, but every time I try to, you know, give you some constructive criticism, you know, your body language is always off. Or he would say things like, oh, how come you can't take it? You know, you can't take as well as you can give. And that used to make me even more angry, you know, than even what was the underlying issue that we were trying to resolve. I hope today that he can say that I'm better than where we started out from.
Yeah, I think you're a lot better. And it's like back in the day, you couldn't take your own medicine. But because she loves to correct me about many things.
Because there was so much to correct.
Yeah, there was a lot to correct. I agree. And all of us have our starting points in life. I had some mannerisms that were not very great. And I also used to speak in certain ways that may be funny. She also likes to correct my diction and my grammar and all those things. Yeah, just to
my father
that
was a teacher.
Yeah,
to it show had that to show
she went to a better school than, you know, than I did. But
I don't know about that.
but let's put all that aside. Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Is it like there are some kind of people who just have a very low threshold for
absolutely yes. Short okay. Answer, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I would say that and you can even scroll through your own circle of friends, there is that one member of your crew who is a sponge for correction, in that they take it so well. They take it, you know, in good faith. Whatever you tell them, you know, you're guaranteed that, you know, they will take it with a good spirit. But also within that same circle of friends, there's that one friend or maybe two of them that, in fact, you have to call a committee together to even agree on how you tell them that, look, this is wrong, or you shouldn't be like this. And I mean, whether we like to acknowledge it or not, everyone has a blind side, but our attitude to our blind side is what, you know, it's what actually positions us either to, you know, receive criticism well, you know.
Okay,
or not.
So but there's a factor in all this, mm-hmm. based on our own experience,
yeah.
in handling criticism. I think there's a factor of trust, which is like, okay, I believe that I have blind spots. I don't know everything, and I'm not perfect.
For some people, to even get them to even acknowledge that, look, you're less than perfect, you have feet of clay, there are issues that you need to address. It's even a problem first,
okay.
right? Yeah. So let's even put that on one scale. There are people who are convinced that the rest of us mere mortals have nothing to correct, whether about their character, whether about their competence, or, you know, and there is that group of people.
So will you say that's personality driven or background, and something they're running away from, they've been criticized all their lives, and then they get into a relationship whether dating or married relationship, and this person is coming again to amplify their flaws, errors and their mistakes. So they just react too sharply.
I think part of it definitely is, you know, where they're coming from. Like you alluded to, if you grew up in an environment where everything, you know, highlighted was your fault, you know, you don't want to enter into a new relationship or a new friendship where that's the one thing that is constantly being highlighted again and again. So yes, it can point to past maybe trauma, but not everybody really is running away from trauma. Some people just have more than their fair share of, I guess, the pride gene, you know, that just says, you know, no one is qualified to correct me. So either way, there's something there to heal from, you know, or to, you know, grow out of.
Okay, so what you're saying in essence is that some people who are running away from certain things, they have a very low threshold for criticism.
Yes.
They've been criticized all their lives. Many things have happened to them. They're very fragile when
very
it comes
fragile.
To their esteem.
Yes.
You know, and their sense of personhood, if I can put it that way, or who they are. You know, so it's difficult to really correct them. And if you're dating that kind of a person, you need to seek to understand them. You know, but generally speaking.
Yes.
How do we get to that place of really trusting somebody to correct us?
Okay, so that's a big conversation. So just over the last weekend, I was away with some really amazing women. You know, we were off, you know, just, you know, we had an opportunity to just talk. And I remember one of the thoughts that was on the table was, you know, when you're corrected by someone who is near you and who is dear to you, what are the reasons why it's so difficult to take it down? It's like taking your medicine. Why is it so difficult to take a pill that you know is supposed to make you better? And someone was like, look, it's the way they say it. It's the way they say it. Sometimes, you know, the language in which this criticism, you call it, oh, it's constructive criticism, but it comes out like a brick. And you're like, I know I have issues, but you know, there is a way you can.
So you're talking about blaming language, right? Where people, it looks like it's a blame.
Strong language. Let's call it strong language.
Or focusing on certain personality traits that a person is already. If I know I'm struggling with this personality trait, and you're always harping on it again, it's just, it can be too overwhelming.
That's correct.
Yeah. So when you, for instance, criticize somebody, you're saying, look, you're always coming late. You don't get ready on time. And you're always saying it. And sometimes the person talking does not even do anything to help the person who has a very bad sense of timing to improve.
Why are you going below the belt? Let's put it on the table. So when we first got married, one of the biggest issues we had was time. And I know that sometimes some of my helpful contributions, you know, didn't come across.
I don't know why you think I was talking about
you're
horse,
going below the belt when you talk about
maybe
timing.
It's guilty conscience.
Maybe it's possible.
Okay.
However, one thing I had to learn through the years is and it came from a very interesting conversation, and I'll just point us back to it. There was this one day I remember that you were trying to correct me about something and I didn't like it. I'll tell you honestly, I didn't like it. And there was a comment that you made. You were like, look, there are people that come to me with issues like this, you know, organizational health issues, and they get real value from me. Why is it that the person I sleep on the same bed with is the one that cannot see the value in what I'm putting on the table? I mean, outside of my initial gra-gra in that moment of, you know, like, I don't even want to hear this. You know, I really had to think about it. I thought again about that conversation Jesus had about the dishonorable steward. And then he was saying to his disciples after that conversation, the children of this world are wiser even than the children of the kingdom. And I thought to myself that what my husband is saying is so true. How can I, because of pride, because of whatever it is in the moment, I don't want him to know that I don't know, you know, refuse to take something that can bless me, that can help me. And really in that moment, I had a mind shift and I told myself that, okay, going forward in this marriage, I will do my best to control my initial reaction to criticism. However sore of a point I think
so
you're hitting.
Just to be able to say, what is the meat?
What's the meat? Yeah. Yes. Don't throw the baby away with the bathwater. Even when your spouse's language seems a little extreme or hurtful, it doesn't take away from the fact that there is something that needs to be corrected in that moment. And you're doing yourself a disservice when you don't juice it. So, you know, in that particular conversation that we had, I mean, I could see, for example, that I was the one hurting myself. I was the one harming myself. I was the one losing in that whole equation simply because I was just too prideful. And it was a complete mind shift for me.
Thank you for acknowledging that
I'm a Christian.
I can be right sometimes, even in this context. So we're going to go on a short break right now. Don't go away. Stay with us and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's a Better Half podcast and we have been discussing criticism and how it can make or mar your relationship. So whether you're married or you're single in a dating relationship or you're just preparing to get into a relationship, you must know that there's something that's going to be on the table through the lifetime of your relationship. And that is the ability to navigate between making criticism in your relationship hurtful or helpful. And that's what we've been discussing. So let's kick it again. In your opinion, how do we really identify the difference between constructive criticism and hurtful comments? I'm talking real ways to identify now, because the way you're looking at me, like you're trying to.
Because I'm 20 years married and I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, yeah. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that question, but since it's on the table, I think the responsibility is on both of us to always look for the best way to guard your tongue. You know, so if I'm looking at an image in front of me, there are so many ways to say it or to describe it. And sometimes we're just so unguarded with the way we speak to each other. When you're in a loving relationship with someone, you must be mindful of the language, right? The language you use in describing the good and the bad things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a proverb we say often that you can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. And all it's saying is that when you keep the outcome you want to see in mind, when you're bringing up a particular matter for criticism, for example, it's because you want to see things get better. If you keep the end goal in mind, it can affect and help you in just the way you construct, you know, and put together the correction, you know, or the critique that you're trying to put on the table. And ask yourself, if I'm on the receiving end of what I want to say, will I like it? Will I swallow it? Will I take it? I think if you always put yourself on the receiving end, it can help us in the way we this criticism.
Because that really helps to bring in the balance of love. There's a way you lovingly correct somebody, that they know that this is not an attempt to make them feel less than themselves.
Yes.
You know, this is not an attempt to make you feel inadequate. It is not an attempt to make you feel less than who you are. And then there's a way you also communicate when you want to engage constructive criticism, that it is more about how we get better in our relationship than the person who is not pulling their weight. You know, there's a way I can talk to somebody, move your feet, you know, you're dragging, you're this, you're that, but to say, we need to go faster. There are two. That the first one is directed at a person. The second one is we need to move forward. We need to go faster. So you know what to do to make us go faster. I don't have to consistently say, you know, get off your board, start walking, start running, or anything like that. Something, you know, the way some people.
But yeah. We can acknowledge, though, that sometimes, I mean, honestly, and just to make it very practical for someone who is listening to us and thinking, ah, but you don't understand. The spouse I'm dealing with or the boyfriend or girlfriend I'm dealing with right now, I've said it as constructively and as kindly as I can a million times. They're just not hearing me. And so I get so angry and I get so full of, you know, the frustration. And yeah. I don't know when I blurt it out.
Yeah.
So I hear you. I hear you. Seeing as how he has been in that place more often than the average person, I will let him address that.
No, the issue is that we need to catch ourselves getting overcome by the emotion of the spontaneous emotion, the emotion of the moment when somebody is, you know, doing something or saying something that is completely out of place. We just need to remember, this person is not my apprentice. This is not my child. This is my spouse. This is not my subordinate in the office. This is my spouse. Because the reason why a lot of people struggle to receive criticism from their spouse or their partner or date is that you feel that the commonality in this relationship is love. We love each other. So there's a way that should
color
our language, our mannerism, and how we... So it's not the same way. This the way you correct, you know, your junior associate, or the way you correct your driver or something. It's not the way you correct your spouse. But some people in counseling say, look, this man or this woman honors the housemaid or the staff in the house more than me, because the way you even correct me in front of a staff or in front of my child makes me feel like even the child will be looking down on me. Yeah. You know, because there's a way you speak to a man or a woman in front of a child, yeah, that is condescending.
Very condescending. Yeah.
And it shows that there's no love in this arrangement. And that's
and honor. I think two key things. Honor, and then just putting yourself on the receiving end of the communication you're putting out. And then asking yourself, what's the end goal? If the end goal is that we should move forward or let us move faster, like you said earlier, then there's a way to navigate that conversation and just make it different.
Yeah, because there are things you say that even make people want to sit down and not move at all. So when you see that you're not getting the kind of result that you desire, you then need to change the game and just be more conscious. And that leads me to practice of active listening. You know, because when I feel heard by my partner, it's easy for me to feel like she understands me. And so when she corrects me, we're on the same page. But if everything I've been saying has been going over your head, you're not showing any serious interest, you know, somebody's talking to you, you are flipping your phone, you're on social media and all that. And then you're trying to correct the person later. And the person feels like, look, but I've explained my perspective or my understanding of this thing to you. But when I was trying to do that, you were not actively engaging. You were not listening. Well, you just wake up and just start correcting me when there's a perspective alignment that needed to have happened, but you did not heed it because of your lack of, you know,
ability to listen. I think it's, we can't even overemphasize the importance of active listening, because active listening means I'm receiving what my counterpart is saying, and I'm receiving it not just to cook up a response, because many of us are in that space. We're listening only to pick holes in what they're saying or to defend ourselves. I mean, I've found myself there a few times. I'm listening to find, okay, this is how I'm going to butt in and, you know, negate everything he has said, or, you know, to just, you know, debunk all of the allegations he has put on the table. It was like real courtroom drama, especially at the beginning of our marriage. You know, but active listening means I really want to hear what you're saying. I value you enough, and I value what you're saying enough to take stock of how this has made you feel, how I may be contributing to slowing us down on this journey of progress, and what steps we ought to take to, you know, just to do things better. So active listening, always a key component of just turning criticism from something hurtful into something that is really helpful. And there's a reason why we have two ears and one mouth, they say. We should do twice as much listening as talking. And if we invest in listening to each other and allowing, giving each other the grace, you know, that gift of focused attention, I think it will go a long way in building trust.
Exactly. Us. Yeah. It's a great long way to build trust, you know, between us. And when we also feel like we've said hurtful things, we should, you know, just practice apology. Just apologize. What I mean is that, you know, sometimes you didn't mean to say something that will be hurtful.
Yeah, I said it in the heat of the moment.
Yes.
But I've abused your parents in the middle of that anger. No, please don't do that.
I'm even talking about just correcting someone.
Okay.
But you say it the wrong way.
Okay.
Yeah, you say it the wrong way. And so the person is hurt.
Scenario. Let me put the scenario on the table. We're trying to fix something between us and in the language that we use. And in an unguarded moment, I say, yes, you picked it from your mother. I see the way your mother talks to your father. That is completely below the belt. It should not come up in our conversations with each other. So what you're saying is go back and apologize for that and agree that you will not speak like that again.
You know, there are some things that you say that the body language of the receiver just changes immediately.
Except on a landmine.
Yes. So it's important for you to understand that at that point, something has gone wrong. If you feign ignorance and you just go on, what you are dealing with is you are reducing the trust, you know, collateral within your relationship. Mm-hmm. And when that trust deficit really becomes very high, it just messes up your ability to correct, confront, or criticize your spouse or your partner. So we need to invest in trust. And one of the ways we invest in trust is to show people that it's not about them. I'm not trying to be derogatory. I honor you. I respect you. So if you become emotional, I must slow down. When somebody becomes emotional and you still keep going on, it means that you don't care about how they feel about what you're saying. You just want them to change and change overnight. And you want them to hear you without you hearing them. And there are many ways you hear people. It's not what they are saying, but you know, the body language. Yeah. So as we wrap up, you know, creating a safe and supportive environment for discussions that are sensitive, crucial conversations in our relationship, where we actually go a long way to help us not to be, you know, butting heads all the time on such issues that leads to bad criticism, you know, destructive criticism. There are some things that if we have the grace to sit around the table and engage in crucial conversation, we are better able to resolve them. We will always have difficult issues in our relationships, but many people try to sweep those things under the carpet. And then one day you lash out and talk about it, you criticize, and it's not worth taking.
Yeah.
So what about just creating that
safe space,
you know, where we can discuss, we can address sensitive topics, difficult issues, you know?
You know, I think in that space where we're trying to create safe environments, healthy environments, where criticism can be helpful, I think it's important to not to wait, like you said, until things become frustrating before you try to unpack matters. And I think one way to do that is to schedule it. I think it's okay for couples, for families to schedule it, whether weekly, you know, or every other day, to have conversations where we're sitting each other down and asking, is there something I've done recently that hurt you that you'd prefer me to do differently? Let's invite each other into that trust circle. And not wait until things pile up and become this huge mountain of offense before we try to address issues or before we try to be honest with each other.
Well, you know, we're almost out of time. But one thing that came to mind as you started to talk about this is the fact that some people just believe that when you start to, you know, schedule something, have a meeting, address this, that means the marriage is in trouble.
Oh, no.
Because things are supposed to be spontaneous. We're loving each other spontaneously. We're, you know, happily ever after.
If you only service your car spontaneously, you're setting yourself up for trouble. You have to schedule the servicing of your car, the servicing of your regular equipment, just to maintain health, you know? And it's the same way. We ought to see our marriages the same way. If we sit down and have those regular engagements and regular touch points, what it does is that it creates a circle of safety. You know, I'm used to inviting your comments on the big things, on the little things. And I've seen you deal with sensitive matters with honor and with respect. So when you come back at me with a mirror of something I've done wrong, and you say it in loving language, you say it from the perspective of how can we be better, not bitter. Of course, it's easier to swallow that pill and to address issues of character.
Thank you very much, my better half. It's interesting that, you know, time goes very fast when we're discussing important issues. But the important thing that we're landing on today is for a young person, whether in a relationship or young in marriage, please deal with that need that says that if you're having crucial conversations quite often, or you are addressing important things, it means that your relationship is in trouble. No, piling things up, you know, pushing things under the carpet will not help your relationship. So if there are crucial issues, let's create that environment where there's, you know, high level of trust and we can sit without fighting and talk about important issues.
Last thought, especially to the husbands. Whatever it is you're about to criticize or, you know, comment about, please put yourself on the receiving end of that conversation and you will agree with me that there will be a better way to say it. Yes, I'm speaking to the husbands.
Yes, we're speaking to
to the husbands. Yeah. Specifically to the husbands,
to the wives, to the wives.
There is a better way to
to say it well. Women, say it well. And on that note, we come to the end of this podcast where we're addressing criticism. See you the next episode. And may your relationship and marriage be sweet.
Yes.
Bye.